joint meeting of the Special Committee of the House and Senate Energy Committees to order. The time is 2:10, and we're very happy to be here on the Kenai Peninsula with a large turnout on a very beautiful sunny day after a long series of Alaska Power Association meetings, so we appreciate your fortitude in sticking with us. Today at our meeting, we have Representative Peterson, Representative Tuck, Senator McGuire, myself, Representative Millett, Representative Johansson, Representative Chenault, Representative Olson, and Senator Huggins here. So it's pretty amazing that we have this large of a turnout from our legislative body down on a sunny Friday afternoon, and so we're all very happy to be here. I'll just quickly go over the agenda for our meeting today. First, we're going to start out with a presentation from one of our finance members' staff. Mike Hawker's staff, Larry Persley, is going to be here to give us an update on the stimulus funds. As you know, we're going into special session on Monday, August 10th, to do a couple of things. One is to confirm the lieutenant governor, and the other one is to talk about overriding the veto from the stimulus money. So also in attendance, I don't want to miss, we have Representative Bob Herron is here from Bethel. He's flown all the way up here to sit and partake in our energy committee meetings. We had one out in his district. This is a long series of field hearings that we've been having throughout the state. The Senate's also been traveling, too. We've gone to Nome, Kotzebue, Noatak, Bethel, Dillingham, Alleghenyuk, you guys went to Tanana and Ruby. So we've been around the state, and we'll continue to go around the state. Later this month, we'll be going to Dutch Harbor, and then in September, we'll be going to Haines, and that will probably conclude our field hearings for the House side and the Senate side, I believe. So we've been busy working on what we call a statewide energy plan, and that's one of the pieces that we'll be asking you to testify and give us your input on things you'd like to see in a statewide energy plan. Also, we have two bills that the House and the Senate have done jointly, which is one is the Department of Energy bill and a renewable energy bill that talks about funding and putting some sideboards on some funding issues that we've had with the Renewable Energy Fund. Legislature has funded $100 million last session for the renewable and $25 million this year. So we'll be talking about both of those things, and we just want to hear from you. We're on a listening tour, so we'll be listening to you to take direction on what you'd like to see in a statewide energy plan, how you're adjusting to the high price of fuel. I know cooking lit is a big issue here and in South Central and in the rail belt, so we'd be more than happy to listen to your thoughts about cooking lit gas and the spur line and the big gas pipeline if you have issues with that, too. Without anything else, I'd like to invite Larry Persley up here to talk about the stimulus fund.
I can't hear you. I don't know if I'm the only one.
Yeah. Okay. See if they can. Is that better? Okay. And we are on official record, so I'll just ask folks when they do testify, if you just give us your name and your affiliation before you start your public testimony. We are on record here, so with that.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Larry Persley, an aide to Representative Hawker, co-chair of House Finance Committee. I've been working this session to gather information and answer questions for the legislature and the public on federal economic stimulus funding that's coming to Alaska. As you had mentioned, the legislature will be meeting Monday in special session to take up a possible override of a veto of some energy efficiency funding that is available to Alaska under the Economic Stimulus Act. What I'd like to do, though, is very quickly, before I get to that, just summarize for the audience and for legislators other pots of energy efficiency funding that is coming to Alaska through the stimulus program. There are three distinct appropriations to the state under the Stimulus Act for energy efficiency money. First is $18 million for home weatherization. That is going to the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. That will just be a continuation of the existing program administered by AHSC. There is $9.6 million coming to the state under the Energy Efficiency and Conservation Block Grants provision of the Stimulus Act. Of that $9.6 million, 60% has to go out to communities, 40% is for the state to spend. The Alaska Energy Authority and Alaska Housing Finance Corporation will share in that 40% that the state is keeping to spend on its projects. I'm told by the administration that the Alaska Energy Authority likely will administer to the grants to communities for the 60% that is going out to the cities, Alaska Housing Finance and the Energy Authority are working to develop criteria for the grants and the selection process for that 60%. The $9.6 million, the state share and the community share, can go to retrofits of commercial buildings, public buildings, residential structures, heating system upgrades, energy efficiency audits, lighting upgrades, public outreach, most anything that would help reduce energy costs. Now, in addition to the $9.6 million that is going through the state, which the legislature appropriated this past session, $4.5 million under the Stimulus Act is going directly to the top 10 cities and top 10 boroughs in Alaska by population. They're receiving their money directly from the federal government rather than going through legislative appropriation. Under that $4.5 million, for example, the Kenai Peninsula Borough is in line for $192,000, the city of Kenai for $50,000. Something to keep in mind for cities and boroughs that don't receive a direct appropriation from the feds under the top 10, the 60% of the $9.6 million that is going to the state must go to communities that did not receive their own direct appropriation under the Stimulus Act. In addition to the money going to the state and municipalities, about $12 million is going directly to 241 tribal governments in Alaska, and that's an average of about $51,000 each. That brings us to the third piece of the energy efficiency funds under the Stimulus Act, and that's the $28 million that will be the subject of Monday's special session. That's called the State Energy Program. It's not a new program, even though it's a new issue, certainly, to the legislature. It's been around since 1996. Actually, a precursor of this federal program dates back to 1976. But it's never been much money in the past. In fiscal year 2007, the state received $392,000, and in fiscal year 08, it was $258,000. What the Stimulus Act did is really jump that up quite a bit. We're looking at $28 million. Under the federal law, that money goes to each state's official designated energy office in Alaska, that is the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. There's a 1996 Memorandum of Understanding, which was amended in 2001, that says the state energy program funds that come to Alaska are shared 50-50 between AHFC and AEA. So in the past, when it was a few hundred thousand a year, that was shared between those two agencies, 50-50. I have been told by the administration that if the legislature overrides the $28 million, Governor Parnell himself will get personally involved in how the $28 million is spent, rather than just letting it go out under the old Memorandum of Understanding, 50-50 between the two agencies. The Department of Energy's objectives for the state energy program are pretty clear, but pretty broad. The idea is to increase energy efficiency to reduce costs for consumers, businesses, and government, to reduce reliance on imported energy, to improve the reliability of electricity and fuel supplies, and to reduce the effects of energy production and use on the environment. And that money, the $28 million in our case, can go toward building retrofits, weatherizations. The state could set up loans or grant programs for energy efficiency projects. It could distribute the money to municipalities if it wanted. It could use it for promotion, public education of energy efficiency standards, street lighting upgrades, almost anything that would save energy costs. The money cannot go toward land purchases. It cannot go toward construction of new buildings. It cannot go to non-energy related repairs. So you could repair a building and do energy upgrades. You could not use it to fix the gutters or repair roof rot. And it cannot go to peer research. One nice thing in the past, there was a 20% state match required for energy program funds. That 20% match has been waived for the stimulus funding. The status of the $28 million is the legislature appropriated it in House Bill 199. Governor Palin vetoed that appropriation. If the legislature fails to override Monday, the money would stay with the Treasury. It would not go to other states. There were some initial reports early on that if Alaska didn't take its share, it would be prorated out to other states. The Department of Energy said that's not the way it works. It would just not go anywhere. The application deadline for the $28 million was back on May 12th. Alaska Housing Finance did submit an application, sort of a bare-bones application, as the sort of as a placeholder, I guess you would say. But the Department of Energy has agreed to accept a late amended application from Alaska. They had originally had considered granting Alaska an extension until January 2010, so the legislature could take it up in regular session without a special session. The Department of Energy later decided they would like to wrap this up by September 30th. That became moot when the legislature realized you'd have to go into special session to confirm a lieutenant governor anyhow. The legislature can override the veto, but they cannot direct the funding. If you override the veto, what you're doing is approving the line item appropriation of $28 million to the State Energy Office, to Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. The spending decisions are up to the executive branch, to the governor. You can't add intent language or amend the appropriation. It's just an up or down veto override. Back in March, Alaska Housing Finance and AEA submitted proposals to the governor's Office of Management and Budget as to how they would propose spending their 50% shares of the $28 million. The governor's office never adopted the proposals, never submitted them to the legislature. The state can amend its spending plan in its final application to the Department of Energy. Just for the record, HFC, on its half of the $28 million, proposed spending $4.5 million for community building weatherization, $2 million for weatherization and rebate support, the energy audit program, software and expansion of that energy audit program, $4 million for a home-based renewable energy program, $1.8 million for consumer education, and $2 million to work on statewide energy efficiency standards. AEA, back in March, proposed adding $7 million to the Renewable Energy Fund, $2.5 million for development of renewable energy, $3.9 million for energy-efficient equipment, rebates, and incentives, $750,000 for energy efficiency training and education, and $100,000 for commercial facility energy audits. But as I've said, discussions I've had with the governor's office and OMB is that if the legislature overrides the $28 million, they're going to look hard as to how they want to spend it and to try to get the most they can for $28 million. The federal rules for the state energy program funds have become contentious. Well, I'll get to the point. The Department of Energy requires that the governor pledge that the state will promote and encourage improved energy efficiency for residential and commercial buildings, period. We received a letter from the Department of Energy August 5th confirming that the legislature does not need to adopt, impose, or enforce a statewide building code in order to qualify for state energy program funds. That letter of August 5th further explained the state must provide assurances to the Department of Energy that the state will encourage, promote, and assist municipalities that choose to adopt their own energy efficiency codes to achieve the goals of the program, which are reduced energy consumption in public and private buildings. Alaska is the only state that has not been approved for the state energy program stimulus funding. The other 49 have submitted the required assurances to the Department of Energy. I think a lot of the controversy is, at the very beginning when the Stimulus Act was passed in February, the initial reports were that states, to receive the funds, would have to show that they would comply with model energy efficiency standards for 90% of square footage of new and renovated buildings by 2017. The Department of Energy, as they work through the legislation, figured out how to enforce it, how to deal with it, later determined that meeting energy efficiency standards is a goal, not a mandate. They're not going to go around and count square footage. They're not going to demand that states count square footage. They want each state to prepare a plan for how it intends to promote and encourage improved energy efficiency standards. That plan is not due at the time of application for the funds. It can be submitted later. An acceptable plan to the department would include outreach, education efforts among homeowners, commercial property owners, builders, lenders, others involved in the industry, assisting those municipalities that choose to adopt their own energy efficiency standards, pretty much a general plan to promote efficiency and savings, and then report on the results of that plan. The Department of Energy has issued a contract to the Pacific Northwest National Laboratory to draft voluntary compliance standards for states that want to measure their success at improved energy efficiency. The idea being that if there are states that want to compare themselves to others, that there should be a uniform set of how to measure, how to sample buildings. There's talk of taking, each state took 44 residential structures and 44 commercial structures and tracked them to see how their energy efficiency improved over the years. If there's some consistency to measurement, the states would be able to judge themselves against others, but those are voluntary guidelines. And that is a short summary, leaving time for questions.
Thank you, Larry. Are there questions from the committee? Thanks. That was very thorough, and I think that will help a lot of the legislators and the public understand what we're overriding and the veto override. Representative Chenault?
Okay, Mr. Chairman. Larry, in the AEA proposed funds, it talks about 3.9 for energy efficient equipment rebates and incentives. I've had conversations with individuals in my local area that are putting in local windmills just for their own home use, and one of the questions that they've come up with is why would we incentivize wind farms for nonprofits versus not allowing something for private individuals? Do you know if that's going to be included in there, or is that something that AEA or ourselves are going to have to talk about?
Well, through the chair, Speaker Chenault, certainly incentives for wind power would be an allowable use for the $28 million. Not speaking certainly for the governor or for AEA, I would think if the legislature votes to override, I assume they'd welcome suggestions from lawmakers as to how to direct that $28 million. But certainly incentives for wind farms or anything else that is going to save on fossil fuel would be allowable under the $28 million, just not pure research.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the members? Thank you, Larry, and let Representative Hawker, no, we appreciate borrowing you for a couple meetings and appreciate you your hard work on.
He's happy to pay for it.
Yeah.
He's in finance. He's got plenty of money.
Thanks. Well, you've done a phenomenal job for the legislature, you know, doing the research on the stimulus money. And with that, we'll continue down. Well, we'd like to welcome Mayor Dave Carey from the Kenai Peninsula Borough. We're happy to have you. Thanks for letting us come to your beautiful community and have a meeting.
Thank you very much. Again, my name is Dave Carey, and I'm the borough mayor for the Kenai Peninsula. Thank you for allowing me to address this special committee on energy and for holding this meeting in Kenai. And how appropriate that you are meeting at the Challenger Center for Science and Technology Education. Today's topics could not be more important to the state of Alaska's residents, and especially to those of us that live on the Kenai Peninsula and those considering moving their families and commercial interests here. Until last October, when I was elected borough mayor, I had served for 21 years on the Homer Electric Association Board of Directors, being president for the last 6 years. I was also a board member and officer of the Alaska Energy and Electric Cooperative and the Alaska Power Association Executive Committee and chairman of its legislative committee. Energy in Alaska is truly at a crossroads. One needs only to drive by the idle Agrium facility to understand the issue in loss of jobs and community health. The oil and gas industry on the Kenai Peninsula is slowly withdrawing as the need for new demands of residential, let alone commercial, users are not being met. We are facing the possibility of brownouts this winter if the temperature drops too low. This could result in loss of life, as well as failure of businesses, which are already on the economic edge of sustainability. House Bill 218 deals with the establishment of a State Department of Energy. This idea, on its own, is neither good nor bad. The important question, as a new bureaucracy is being discussed, is whether or not energy policy and application would be enhanced and streamlined. Would this assist in getting the needed natural gas to the Kenai Peninsula and to South Central Alaska? Developing and administering a comprehensive energy plan for Alaska is long overdue, and it must address production, distribution, conservation, and consumption. All four factors must be seen as essential. A unified rail belt system is required for generation and transmission, but distribution must be left to the local co-ops. Promoting cost-effective energy efficiencies is in new construction and renovations, in maintenance of existing public buildings, and in the establishment of community standards is good. However, they must be supported by local residents and those in decision-making positions. This new department would serve as the conduit for all U.S. Department of Energy funds. This is a good idea if it speeds up the process of getting funds to the local communities and those individuals who will apply for these funds. All too often, the paperwork required by new government programs is so burdensome that businesses and individuals walk away. Government must do all it can to be user-friendly while providing needed oversight of public funds. House Bill 219 relates to renewable energy grant funds and the process for determining who gets funding. It also speaks to the desire that all funds are correctly spent and includes the requirement that activity reports for each project be submitted at intervals to be decided by the authority. This sounds reasonable. However, it is my experience that especially smaller projects can end up requiring so much work on activity reports and related paperwork that a significant amount of the funds are spent on people sitting at desks and computers rather than on the funds being spent to directly provide for the project purpose. Since these bills both deal with energy funds for renewable projects, let me just add my own opinion that all federal funds, stimulus or otherwise, should be accepted by the state. If there are any other, if any other regions object, the Kenai Peninsula Bill will happily take all of those funds for renewable development. Today, I am providing the special committee, hot off the presses, literally run off this morning, the Kenai Peninsula Agenda Promoting Alternative Energy and Energy Efficiency. It is my goal that the Kenai Peninsula Borough become a premier area of Alaska for the development and implementation of alternative energy research. As you read through this booklet, which is online through the Borough Mayor's Office webpage, you will see that we are including all possible types of alternative energy, as well as what we have done so far in government and in industry. This booklet will include many additions in the future as we obtain more grants and more information. Please remember, you should keep the Kenai Peninsula Bureau at the front of the line whenever you have to make decisions concerning who gets funding for alternative energy grants and programs. It is logical for you to do this because you are building on the historical progress and foundation since the discovery of the Swanson River field in 1957 and the energy which it has provided for all of us. We must never think of energy from fossil fuels as the enemy of alternative energy. We must have both along with conservation and technological efficiencies. At our formation in December of 1963, the Kenai Peninsula Borough, 38% of our borough was comprised of the Cook Inlet. 28% of the borough is the west side of the inlet. Our borough is truly urban and rural with the needs of each. Please do not continue to develop energy policy that puts rural versus urban versus southeast. We must have an Alaskan energy policy that meets the needs of every Alaskan and does not support the destruction of the rural ways of life and peoples. And finally, I wish to promote the development of geothermal energy. The Kenai Peninsula Borough includes four active volcanoes: Spur, Redoubt, Eriamna, and St. Augustine. We should all be promoting policies and regulations to assist in the development of geothermal energy. Mount Spur could provide a significant amount of clean energy for the people of Anchorage, the Mat-Su, and the Kenai Peninsula Borough. And again, I thank you very much for coming down here.
Thank you, Mary Carey. We appreciate you being here. Are there any questions for the mayor? Any members? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you have written testimony, we'd be happy to take that.
Good. I've already given it to you.
Okay. Thank you very much. And next on our presentations will be from Mark Foster to give us an update on the Gretzky bill. If you don't mind, Mark, just kind of giving us a broad description of what Gretzky is. I think there might be some people that don't know what that is.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mark Foster, and I appear today before you as a representative from the Joint Utility Task Force, which is comprised of board members from the Rail Belt Utilities. And I've participated as a board member in that of MLNP. I was asked to present to you today a status report by Rebecca Logan, who's the chair of the Chugach Board and the chair of the Joint Utility Task Force. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to appear before you. This past Wednesday morning at 6:30 a.m., a representative from each of the utilities got together to ascertain whether they had the votes to adopt the current draft of the Gretzky. And the Gretzky, in broad terms, is an electric generation, transmission, and gas transmission and supply nonprofit corporation. While the representatives expressed support for the basic working concept of creating a vehicle to work together and to create vehicles to fund critical state infrastructure and critical utility infrastructure, there did not appear to be a majority in favor of the current proposal. Indeed, two out of the three of the generation utilities did not support the proposal as it was in front of them. The Joint Utility Task Force full board meeting convened shortly thereafter at 7, where the chairperson announced that, indeed, the straw poll didn't indicate that there was sufficient support to move forward with that current working draft. Representatives from the utilities then expressed their concerns, depending on their particular perspective. There were many who expressed a concern about the lack of progress in getting to a draft that would get a majority vote. And there were others who wanted to continue to express their concern about the particulars of the draft that they had concerns with. Representatives from the state were also present, and they expressed concerns about the time running out on getting together to address some of the issues that are critical. As you can imagine, a lively discussion ensued when you had something like an even split among various groups and interests. At the conclusion of the discussion, the chair basically announced from her reading and a reading and its showing of hands of the group, there was a commitment to work together to find a mutually agreeable, clearly defined business purpose and a structure for the Rail Belt Electric sort of infrastructure, and to share those current issues that people have among the groups. As you can imagine, there was a lot of interest in getting together after that meeting to figure out where do we go from here. So for the next 2 days, discussions ensued among all the interests, and members fanned out to look for where are the mutual areas of sort of agreement and what concerns could they basically eliminate as they try and come together to get to a consensus, if possible. Based on the polling from that 2 days of discussions, by the chair and others, there does appear to be a consensus emerging around a less ambitious program compared to the GRETC as it's currently conceived. The basic concept around which there appears to be consensus includes the Rail Belt Electric Utility transmission infrastructure and what I would call a reliability component that goes with that. It's focused on common interests, the common interests of strengthening the reliability of the transmission system, reserves that support the transmission system, and rapid recovery resources like batteries to enable the transmission system to quickly recover and be reliable. It also focuses on the common interests of enhancing reliable access to renewable resources that are throughout the rail belt by strengthening the capacity of the transmission backbone to be able to make use of those resources. There's also an interest in creating rules that apply to people who want to get onto the transmission system and use it to move power up and down the rail belt. And there's also an interest in building on the good work of the administration in helping people focus on key issues regarding energy in the rail belt. Indeed, the governor's transmittal letter on Gretzky prominently featured our common interest in transmission infrastructure and reliability. Going forward, the Joint Utility Task Force plans to reconvene as soon as practical with utility board and management representatives, a third-party neutral facilitator as the chair, and a task of creating a committee substitute for the GRETC bill that would provide for a regional transmission and reliability resource planning entity and a funding plan for an initial slate of projects. One of the concerns expressed by many of those who weren't in favor of GRETC is, what are we buying? What do we get out of it? And so that's one of the things that many people were interested in seeing as part of the package. Finally, I want to thank Steve Haginson, Jim Strandberg, and Joe Balash for their hard work in sort of pushing the utilities along and getting them to focus on what are their core common interests and what can they do to advance those. And I want to definitely express my appreciation for their hard work. Thank you. Any questions? I'd be happy to answer.
Thanks, Mark. Is there any questions from the members? Mark, just can I clarify one thing? So you are going to try to come to some position on a CS for the legislature. I think you have the GRETC in sitting both in the Senate and House Energy Committees, and we were waiting for some guidance from the utilities on what. So you've now narrowed it down to something less aggressive than what was put forward.
Yes.
So the agreeable compromises to work on a transmission policy.
A transmission and reliability. There are some utilities who don't perceive transmission alone to capture some of their concerns. So that's why I want to make sure it's transmission and reliability are really the two concepts that we want to incorporate.
Okay, great. Thanks. Any other questions? Thank you, Mark. I really
thank you very much.
It. And just for the record, Representative Seaton joined us online a while back, and I forgot to say he was online. So with that, I'd like to invite public testimony. And for those of you that haven't signed up, we do have some sign-up sheets in the back. If you'd like to testify, just put a yes by the box saying you'd like to give us some public testimony. And the first person on the list is Jody Mitchell. Thanks, Jody. I know you have to jump on an airplane, so we're happy you stuck around.
Thank you, Chair Millett, members of the committee, for allowing me to testify today. Some of you know that I'm from Southeast Alaska, so pardon me, but a lot of my comments are pretty particular to Southeast. I'm very much in favor of an energy plan that considers the regional integrated resourcing planning process. So that, what we found in our work in Southeast is that sometimes interties just don't make sense. They're cost prohibitive due to the high cost of submarine cable and risks of failure. And this is specific to the HUNA intertie, for instance. The cost soared from estimated $26 million maybe less than 5 years ago to $45 million today. And so what we're forced to do is look for local resources to the extent that we can. And we've identified a couple of microhydros there that we can bring together in one powerhouse to displace 70% of the diesel consumption for HUNA. It may be that microgrids, such as the Cake to Metlakatla line, and maybe a Chichagof Island grid to connect HUNA, Pelican, Panaki, and Elfin Cove would be more cost-effective, especially where a road is involved, so similar to the Cape-Petersburg intertie. Also, I promote open access and fair and equal rate treatment for those connected to SEPA or any other microgrid that's built primarily with public funds. The goal should be affordable power for Alaskans first without ineffective and overly expensive construction projects. And then on to House Bill 218. I'm in favor of, it makes good sense. I think it will help to ease efforts for the government to work together, the intergovernmental coordination. And as to House Bill 219, I serve on the Renewable Energy Fund Advisory Committee. And I'm afraid that having an independent economist evaluate each project is an unnecessary expense. This is already being done as part of the process. And it's also those results are given to staff and to the Renewable Energy Fund Advisory Committee. So I'm just afraid that will be an undue burden. And also I would urge that if this is undertaken and we do have independent consultants to do this process, that benefit cost cannot be the only metric used in evaluating projects. If the goal is to get the rural villages off diesel, we must consider all the available options and take the one that gives us the best bang for the buck. And I don't believe that oil prices are going to go down, and in fact, probably the opposite, and so we need to minimize our diesel generation. And that's all I have.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the committee? Hearing none. Next on the list is Kathleen Wilson. Kathleen, are you here? Okay. And next we have Frank Corbin. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chairman and members of the committee. Thank you for letting me speak here for a moment. Many of us are in the same boat, so rather than say the same things, I guess I'd like to narrow my commentary down to just one specific issue. I'm the general manager at Nishigat Cooperative in Billingham, Alaska. And just for a second, I'd like to talk about Section 2 of House Bill 219 about the economist. And I guess it's my opinion that this bill brings the economist in too late. In all honesty, I think sometimes when I'm filling out these applications, I'm throwing darts in a darkened room. And we just don't have the resources. We don't have an MBA on staff. We don't have a CPA on staff. I could use, as many meetings as necessary with an economist before I fill out these applications. And I think that would definitely have a cost-benefit ratio as the applications go through the process if the economist was involved as early as possible. I don't necessarily know that this particular division is the appropriate place to get the economist from either. There might be other agencies within the state that could supply that kind of expertise or the university system, but it would be a big help to some of us small companies like mine to have that kind of expertise at the onset. And I guess to follow that up, since I haven't met a one-handed economist yet, there's a lot of issues, and fuel pricing is a big one, is what price do you pick when you project what the cost of fuel is going to be for the future? And that follows your application all the way through, and it's frustrating to pick a number and then 3 months later, somebody tells you, oh, no, you picked the wrong number. The real number that the state's using is this number or that number. And I, of course, would prefer to use the range of best case or worst case scenario. And there are many factors along the way that have the same effect as the potential price of fossil fuels. For example, I might have a cost projection for an intertie, thinking that I'm going to have some of it as a marine, and then somebody from the Department of Fisheries might come along later and say, no, you're going to have to pick up that out of the water and put that up on the land, and that's going to double the price of the intertie. And then later in the process, somebody from the parks might come along and say, well, you can't have that up on a pole. That's got to be buried, and so that's going to double the cost again. So we can make these assumptions up front on these factors and others. And as this goes through the system, all these key things will have an impact on what somebody may or may not say about the application months down the road. And so I guess I would say as early as possible and then have these key factors identified and follow it through, because they will make a significant impact at some point. And so I guess I'll look to answer any questions about that.
Is there any questions from the members? Thank you very much for being here and for testifying. We appreciate it. Kathleen Wilson? Thanks, Kathleen. And just for the record, if you could just state your name and your affiliation.
Hello, my name is Kathleen Wilson. I reside in Kenai, Alaska, and I'm a business consultant. I was recently married to a man from Oregon who's been doing energy audits for commercial and industrial buildings in Oregon for about 15 years, and he's focused quite a lot of his work on lighting. But he's also gotten into small hydro and solar and other technologies to reduce energy consumption. So he's got quite a pretty good bag of skills as well as technology that he can bring into the Alaska situation. Also has worked, he's not here today, but he's worked extensively with the Oregon Energy Trust, and that's a state agency that has set some sort of tariff evidently with the utility providers in Oregon, and they turn the money around and offer incentivizing rebates to businesses who are owners of commercial and industrial facilities to try to kind of bait them into doing the updates. And evidently, there's federal programs for tax credits as well. So I'm looking at this as an entrepreneurial opportunity with the legislation and the stimulus funds to start a company in Alaska that would be able to kind of mortar some of the relationships between utility companies, the state of Alaska, tribes, villages, and so forth, to assist them in bringing their ideas to fruition and completion as a private contractor. And at this point, there isn't any sort of regulatory oversight in terms of credentialing commercial and industrial building auditors that I'm aware of. And I'm not sure if you want to entertain the thought that maybe something like that should be implemented in some of the language. So I'm just kind of raising that as something for you to consider. I have a tendency to be more of a free market economist in my philosophy, but there's going to be so much economic development that we can't even really anticipate all the consequences of it at this point from this kind of a thrust as far as public policy and spending is concerned. And although there are a large number of professionals who are capable of handling big jobs, small jobs, you know, physical engineers and civil engineers and that can are qualified sometimes when it gets down to the nitty-gritty of who's going to actually be doing the installations and who really knows the best light bulb and the best ballast and best fixture to put into a particular light design. I don't know how many people in Alaska there are that do that. So that's where we would try to kind of come in as a small business and fit into the situation, the scenario, and work with, for instance, the borough, maybe doing some updating in the school districts and work with healthcare facilities and all that sort of thing. So I'm just bringing this up because I've worked as a participant with the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation on different levels in the past, and I very much admire them. In fact, I had a meeting with them this morning and with the Community Enterprise Development Corporation, and they were all residential-orientated, and since we're almost opening up a whole new field now with commercial industrial, I think that it might pay to have some foresight into some of the parameters from somebody who's had experience in another state, maybe that's been down that trail, say, for 15 or 20 years, and sort of see, well, this worked, this didn't work, this really caused some big backfires, you know, this is a dead-end trail. And so Representative McGuire has my contact information, and I'd just like to welcome you to visit with us if you have any time to kind of explore those parameters. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Thank you very much, Kathleen, for testifying. We appreciate it. Does anybody have any questions before? Okay. Thanks, Kathleen. And next we have Clay Copeland from Cordova Electric.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and it's great having the opportunity of having the APA Alaska Power Association meetings, having this hearing right afterwards. Just from kind of a high policy level, I remember several years ago the state of Alaska was looking at maybe replacing the role of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission in licensing hydroelectric projects, because one of the really difficult challenges in developing hydro is the long lead time and the expense of the permitting and design work that goes into that. And at that time, I actually testified for that. I thought, boy, we're in a much better position as a state to design and manage that whole licensing process and try to get some of this onerous, or what we felt was onerous, process out of the development of these projects. That was a good time. Recently, I testified this is not the time to be doing that. You know, 5 years ago, we weren't building a lot of hydroelectric projects. That's the time to work on the process. But now that we're actually in, you know, with our fingernails and teeth building hydroelectric projects and actually deploying these energy resources, best to try to keep the process as static as possible and just take one more dynamic and one more challenge out of the mix. And I just wanted to use that as an example for House Bill 218. I like the concept of having a kind of an overarching energy department where hopefully those different aspects of the energy industry or energy sectors are close enough together or work closely enough together or under the same department that it avoids some of the duplication of efforts and some of the overlap. I'm just concerned about the timing because I think we had a lot of really good successes out of the last session. Some of the testimony we had this morning, some of the projects we saw, the Kodiak Pillar Mountain Wind Project, the weatherization that's actually happened in the communities. I know in Cordova, 14 houses as of 2 months ago had actually been weatherized. That's huge progress, and it's 1% of the homes in the community. And there's a long list of ones that are still being knocked out. So I think we're having some good successes, but that puts a lot of pressure on those departments that are trying to get that work done. And even the matter of a few weeks of moving departments, changing organizational structure, I'm just concerned that this might not be the time to try to tweak the process that much. And then to echo some comments about House Bill 219, I'm concerned about, I think the first portion of that, Section 1, is due diligence. I think that's good that we, the you know, that you, I think you've done a good job actually trying to make sure that the money that you put out there actually builds things, is actually solving the problem, and isn't just being allocated politically or doesn't get it to where you want it to be. The second section of that, and I'm going to digress a little bit, I agree that adding an economist into the mix just adds one more step in the process. And Cordova was in a situation with our hydroelectric project where we were shovel-ready, and we're going to build that regardless of whether we got the grant funds. We just happened to be right there with all of our permits in hand, some FEMA funding and other resources to make it happen. So it was just a great opportunity to take that state money and take it right out of our rate base as we get the project done. Adding one more step, I'm an economist in there. Sometimes I think there's enough review because the review committee that you have set up, not all the legislators are going to agree on the projects and whatnot, but I think it just makes it that more difficult for the AEA to get those projects selected and implemented. An alternative to that, and this is where I'll digress a little bit, I remember when I was going through college, and which was partly paid for by my father working out here on an oil platform and me working at a cannery across the river here, I was surprised that we had a program that, with a state loan program, a student loan program, that would fully reimburse teachers that moved out to the bush and taught in rural communities for 5 years after they graduated from college. I think it was a really successful program, and it helped get good education out to the rural areas. But at the time, I thought, boy, why aren't we doing this for electrical engineers and geologists and the human resources that we need to develop our energy in the state? And maybe now's the time to look at that. And if I had my druthers, I'd say if I was going to add one more layer of review to these AEA projects, I'd grab 5 university students, and instead of having them looking at rocks in the lab up at UAF or modeling hydrology on a river, I'd get them out there with hammers and send them to Nooshigak and walk up and down this creek bed. Can we build a dam here? Send them up to, you know, put up flow meters in the rivers to see if there's hydroelectric resources there, and actually get those students out there and engaged in the industry so that hopefully we can keep a few of them up here, because we have the energy resources. We're in no different shape than the rest of the country. We're trying to manage what's this energy crisis. Fortunately, in our state, we have the energy resources. We have a fair amount of capital resources, but I think where we're short is the human resources. I'm seeing some huge cost escalations on our hydroelectric project. A lot of it's due to the consultants we have to bring in, the materials that we have to import, and just the overall market right now with stimulus money on the streets that's kind of setting the profit margins and whatnot for companies to work with. So I would encourage you to look at a different mechanism for that second section of 219. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Clay. I appreciate your comments and your suggestions on the legislation. Is there any questions for Clay? Thank you very much. Marilyn Leland. Thank you for joining us, Marilyn, and thank you for letting us tailgate on your EPA meeting. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate the committee coming here, and I particularly appreciate, I should back up, I'm Marilyn Leland. I'm the Executive Director of Alaska Power Association. And we particularly appreciate you holding the meeting here, the hearing here, and for timing it to be in conjunction with our annual meeting. That's given us an opportunity to testify before you, and particularly some of our members who would not normally be present in person to be able to testify at one of your hearings. So we really appreciate that. A couple things I want to mention today. We thank you for the work that you did on the on HJR 25, the resolution to ask the federal government to consider renewable energy, hydro as a renewable energy. I mean, that just makes sense, and that should be a change that they should make. I do understand that there may be some pushback going on with that, and we've been talking to our delegation in Washington about that. And if there's anything that we can do to help out there, you know, please do let us know. We've had a few years ago, Alaska Power Association approved a resolution asking the governor to create a cabinet-level Department of Energy. And that is something that we do appreciate, that, that the bills have been introduced. I think that there's some fine-tuning that needs to be done on that. I appreciate Mr. Copeland's comments about not wanting to disrupt the process and the work that's already going on. But I think long-term, we do need to look at that. There's a lack of coordination, and we need to bring that together. I appreciate that I have been invited to be part of the energy think tank that the House Energy Special Energy Committee has created. And we've had several meetings, and I think it's a good process, bringing in people from around the state and with the different ideas. There are so many planning processes going on. Alaska Power Association, about a year and a half ago, started an energy planning process, and one of the first things that we discovered was that just sitting around the room counting on our fingers, we came up with 15 different entities around the state that were so-called doing a state energy plan. And I think pulling this energy think tank together, and at the last meeting that we had reports from the Alaska Energy Authority on their progress. I think bringing all of that together is going to be a good thing to help us all work together and really come up with I'm going to say one plan, but we all know there really is at least three plans for the different areas of the state. I also wanted to mention, just update you on the process of the status of net metering. There were three bills that were introduced this session on net metering, and we did ask earlier this year to if you would just hold off on those, and you did, and because the Regulatory Commission has a docket before it on net metering, it's been a good process. They have had more public participation in this than they've ever had on anything. And with public comments, the utilities, our members, have all been very involved in it. We've had working groups of our own to come up with ideas of how it could be structured that will work for the utilities. There have been working group meetings at the Regulatory Commission that has involved both the utilities and the public sector. And through that process, I think we've been able to come up with some consensus ideas that I'm hopeful that the Regulatory Commission is going to be adopting. So I just want to let you know that that did not fall on deaf ears with our members, that we've taken that and we're working with the Regulatory Commission and the public to try to come up with something that's really going to be working for everyone. And so with that, I will be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Marilyn. Is there questions from the committee? Thank you, Marilyn. We really appreciate your being here and once again letting us join your meeting. Mr. Strandberg. Thanks for being here, Jim. We appreciate it. Just name and affiliation for the record, and we'd love to hear your view on the Gretzky legislation and the resource plan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jim Strandberg. I am a project manager with the Alaska Energy Authority on the Gretzky project and the Rail Belt Integrated Resource Planning process. I'll make some brief remarks. We, AEA, participated in the recent Joint Utility Board Task Force meeting, and we were pleased to participate in the, I think, real positive conversations that occurred between the utility board members and also some very good information transfers between the Alaska Energy Authority and the utilities. AEA, as you know, has sponsored a process over the last year to form a new company. And just to bring it down to the level that we can all understand, basically we are facing an energy future, an emerging energy future that in our opinion, is best approached through joint action by the utility industry itself. And under that concept, we have sponsored a process between utility representatives. We provided Department of Law representatives for drafting of a statute to form a new company. And this process has really sprang from the loins of the utilities, if you will. And we are a nurturing agency to assist the utilities to really begin to think in terms of joint action to respond to emerging and very urgent shortages of energy for power generation and for heating as well. So at the meeting, what we heard was that there were three utilities that were willing to actively pursue the continued drafting process in committee substitute for the Gretzky legislation. And those utilities are NEA, Shugach, and the City of Seward. We've had additional discussions with the board chairs of both Golden Valley and Homer Electric, and our discussions, our active cooperative discussions with those utility board members continues to attempt to bring them into the further and urgent consideration of this legislation so that we potentially can see a committee substitute that hopefully would be supported by all the utilities at the beginning of the session. That is our goal, is to sponsor the joint action between the utilities. And for the benefit of the committee members, each of these utilities and their boards are committed to serving the best interests of their individual members. Now, we have six utilities in an area, a relatively small area, and there's a relatively small population base. So the original, this configuration is very good when you have relatively plentiful supplies of fuel and each utility can act insularly for its own interests. However, we now have emerging issues which are beyond the capabilities of any one utility. And the entire regulatory regime and business regime makes it very difficult for these, for individual utilities to think globally, if you will. And we're working very hard with the utilities, and I think they're coming to a recognition that there is a need for joint action. And that is really the process that is occurring here. So we are very happy to come back and report to you. We are continuing this active interaction with the utilities, and we hope for success prior to the session. I'm certainly available for questions.
Thank you, Tim. Is there any questions from the committee? Okay, thank you very much, Tim. Appreciate it. Brad Reed? Thank you for being here, Brad. Appreciate it.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we certainly appreciate your emphasis on energy. One of the biggest threats, I think, to rural Alaskans where I live is the rising cost and to that lifestyle, which could well disappear without the kind of emphasis that we need from the state and regions and other areas by planning together. There was a significant effort by the NANA regions to take a look at energy planning. I think that is doing us well. I think that fits into the state energy plan. I think that also that fits into a department down the road when things look well. So I think that it makes sense to get all the passengers in the same car and get them going down the same road. I think that we've got too many vehicles going separate directions at this point, but I think it needs to be done very slowly, cautiously, and brought together so that it works well and that meshing comes together, but I think eventually it'll do the state well. We've had some significant efforts in our region. We appreciate any sort of money that went into conservation. We had no energy auditors going into last winter. We had a very difficult time. We had a significant effort by the community. 80 volunteers went through the community and weatherized all the homes of the elders in that community. But it was doing the windows, doing the doors, sealing things up. But it's going to take a larger effort to get trained energy auditors in our region in order to allow us, in a sense, to be able to come up with some of our own energy solutions. I see a lot of planning efforts that I hear about in other parts of the state, in Bristol Bay, the Aleutians or whatever. I think all these things, you have creative people out there that are very concerned about energy. I think that the help that you give will allow residents out there to do a better job with the energy that they do have and come up with appropriate solutions. The planning that I've seen at AEA brings a lot of that into account, where there have been the public meetings where you look at the acceptability of different energy forms, which I think will do us in good stead over time. And so that effort feeds in with the regional efforts feeding up. So I think that there's a real tie there that can benefit the whole state. And I do hope you accept the stimulus money. I think there's a great need for it. I know that we have a lot of substandard housing in our part of the state that, you know, the more that we can get people to conserve, the better we're all going to be over the long term. I do have a little concern that I see the Denali Commission's ability to help us with energy projects and rural infrastructure is diminishing rapidly. And, you know, we need to, where possible, hopefully the state can start looking at filling in some of that role, because the need is still great and there's a lot of things that need to be done if we're going to be able to continue a lifestyle out there. I did want to address House Bill 219 to a degree. I agree with the comments previously about economists. I am on the Renewable Energy Fund Advisory Committee as well. There was a significant effort made at making sure that there was economic review of all the projects that went forward. I'll leave it at that. But I did have a little concern about the emphasis on match. I think that weighting has, and something that we discussed there, could have a very negative impact on especially small rural communities where the energy costs are higher than anywhere else. They just don't have the wherewithal to be coming up with matches. And I think it's going to put them at a real disadvantage. I've been to communities where the city office was opened only because they sold poll tabs a certain part of the day. So they really don't have some of the resources together to be putting matches together on this. So I think there has to be some waiting for matches, but also waiting to, you know, the economy of the community or other factors that are going to allow some of these very small communities to be able to be competitive on a match grant program. I think that the economic analysis is good, but I think there's a risk that we sometimes don't weigh, and that's the risk of not doing anything. Or if we put too much weight on the economics, then the risk of the community disappearing or other things that are going to have a real negative effect on that community wouldn't be evaluated. So there's other risks I think we need to evaluate in this process as well. But thank you very much.
Thank you, Brett. And just for the record, could you state your name and your affiliation?
I'm sorry. I probably got a little nervous. Brad Reeve, I'm the general manager at Cotsby Electric.
Great. And is there any questions from the members for Brad? Okay. Representative Tuck?
Yeah, the successes that you had, I remember you testified once before we were up there in Cops View. I just want to congratulate you and thank you for the successes you guys had in weatherizing those people in need that you had there for Cops View. And just for the record, it was Cops View that took place. Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mira Kohler. Good to see you again, Mira.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Mira Kohler, and I am the president and CEO of Alaska Village Electric Cooperative. We serve 53 villages throughout primarily western Alaska. I'd like to pose a rhetorical question to you. Do you know how many utilities there are in Alaska? Do you know how much electricity is generated in Alaska? Do you know how that electricity is generated and how much it costs? You don't. I don't. Nobody does. Because nobody is maintaining statistics that used to be maintained by the state. We have not done so in about 15 years on an annual basis. There was an attempt a few years ago. The Energy Authority retained ICER to put together Alaska Power Statistics. They did so for the year through 2001. We have no records thereafter. How can we manage what we can't measure? We need to get with the act over here, and we need to start maintaining those power statistics again so that we know what is going on. I will now point out to you that there is a utility that serves Sacramento in California. I picked them just because it seemed to me they were about the same size as our utilities in Alaska on an overarching basis. They serve a community of 900 square miles. They sell twice as much electricity in Sacramento as all of Alaska does. It puts into perspective how very small our state is electrically considering. We are delivering electricity across 586,000 square miles, and we have hundreds of utilities to do that. And as I said, I don't know how many. It's somewhere between 200 and 250. Many of those utilities have simply fallen off the map. They almost don't exist. We have a fairly significant number of Alaskans who do not have reliable electricity, who are paying over $1 a kilowatt hour, who are not on the PCE program because they don't have the ability to do the paperwork to get them on the program. So we have a very large problem around the state of Alaska. But then on the other hand, if you look at what we have for our existing utilities, we have created regions within our state. We have Southeast Alaska, we have South Central Alaska, we have rural Alaska, we have the Fort Dam Pool communities. And so we are all competing against each other on a regular basis for small pockets of money that go into our various systems. But we haven't solved anything. South Central Alaska is almost out of gas. Earlier this year in January, we came within a few PSI of losing pressure in the system. If we lost pressure in the system, not only would the electric utilities go black, but our gas utility would go black. If South Central Alaska loses gas to its homes and businesses, it'll be months before those pilot lights can be relit and gas can start flowing again. And it would only happen when it was very cold. It would have to be around 20 below when that happened. So we have a crisis that is on us now, and we don't have a real solution. If this happens in 6 months, in January or February of next year, I just don't know what we'll do. I think that we're going to be in a crisis. We are now. We just don't recognize it. We don't recognize it until it actually happens. We have a transmission system that serves the rail belt that can only move about 70 to 100 megawatts of power between those communities, and the peak load in those communities is about 700 megawatts. I worry about what happens to the transmission system when we have a failure like we did a few years ago when we had a transmission line go down from Beluga to South Central. There are some very major issues that are confronting us, and we really aren't doing very much about it. Until the Denali Commission was formed 10 years ago, there has not been any major investment in infrastructure in Alaska in the energy business whatsoever. The Denali Commission has pumped almost $500 million into basic energy infrastructure. The state has not pumped anything in to match that money. The task is only half done. There is still a lot that needs to be done. I could sit here and bore you for hours. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to, however, urge you to pay very close attention to the concept paper that I have proposed. It's called an All-Alaska G&T. What it does, I would hope, is potentially unite the entire state behind solutions that deliver the greatest bang for the buck, which would typically mean a project in South Central Alaska. And then those benefits get spread throughout the state through a virtual G&T. We really should not be investing money in tiny projects that are going to live a short time and then die due to lack of maintenance, the lack of funds for regeneration of equipment. We really need to be looking at wise investment of scarce dollars and getting the biggest bang for the buck. And I'll be there to participate in whatever it is that you do, and I thank you so much for including me in the Energy Think Tank. It's been a wonderful experience. We really have some dedicated people on that committee from the legislature and the participants around the table, and I think that we all want solutions, and we're all willing to work towards them. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Is there questions for Mayor? Senator Huggins?
Thank you very much for your testimony. I'm Charlie Huggins here from Wasilla area. The statewide energy inventory. Could you describe to me how you visualize chronologically going forward with steps of that process that will bring energy to communities that you're concerned about?
When you talk about the statewide energy inventory, I'm thinking of the Alaska Power statistics, but I think what you're meaning is physical inventory.
It was done by Steve Higginson, the Energy Authority.
And what Steve did was a very commendable effort because it identifies potential resources for a specific community. The flaw with that approach is that the implication is that every community can expect to get money from one source or another to build out that resource in that community. You may be aware that AVEC has pioneered quite a number of wind diesel systems in our communities. We currently have 9 communities that are receiving wind, some to a fairly significant level. All of those projects are what we call mid-penetration projects. So we actually can achieve a penetration of up to 85% of our load from an alternative energy source, which is basically wind. But it is, of course, an intermittent source. And so on an overall basis, you're looking at 20 to 25% displacement of diesel. On average, those systems have cost us about $4 to $5 million. And if you extrapolate that number and say you want to displace 80% of your diesel fuel, you would have to have a penetration of 2 to 3 times your installed capacity of diesel in order to displace that much diesel. So you'd be looking at $12 to $15 million for a community of 400 or 500 people. The investment that would be necessary is gargantuan. It is simply unimaginable. And that is why my proposal is that you look at a Chakachamna or a Susitna or something like that that's going to deliver the maximum number of kilowatt hours at the lowest possible cost, and then those benefits get spread throughout the state. Bush, Alaska only represents about 6 or 7% of the electricity that's generated in the state. So to try and displace a significant portion of Bush, Alaska's electricity, the investment could pay for a lot of production elsewhere at much greater value. But until we all start benefiting from it, you're not going to get universal support across the state, so we need to build up that system.
Thank you, and thank you, Madam Chairwoman.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions for Mayor? Thank you, Mayor. Thank you for participating. Pat Hawkins from Sabotna. Thanks for joining us, Pat. I appreciate you testifying today.
I didn't get a name.
My name is Pat Hawkins. I live at 36115 Pioneer Drive, Soldotna, Alaska. I've been a resident of Alaska since 1966. First, I'd like to thank you for coming down to the Kenai and holding this session. And first time I've ever been to one, so thank you very much. And also, I want to thank you for your public service. In 1968, I came back from Vietnam. I was on board a nuclear-powered cruiser, and I sat there on the fantail with my captain, and it was a nuclear-powered ship. And at that time, that ship could power all of Los Angeles County, 2 nuclear reactors on board the cruiser. And I look and I go fast circle here, 41 years later, here in Alaska, and we're facing an energy shortage. I remember 20 years ago when Tom Stoudemire came down here to the Kenai trying to merge electrical utilities. 20 years ago, nothing was done. They thought he was a gadfly out of his mind. I look at Alaska. When I came up here in 1966, we had energy. You know, we're the greatest state in the entire United States. We have just gobs of gas up at Prudhoe Bay. But we don't have the will and the leadership to go ahead and get a gas line built. Very simple. You know, I'll give up my permanent funds. I'd even go for an income tax to get an in-state gas line to serve the rail belt, serve South Central, have propane for the people out in the rural area of Alaska, and really make a change. Make a change. We sit around here. 2 years ago, I went down to Juneau on my own dime with another gentleman, and I visited a lot of you, talked to you. In-state Alaska Gas now. And here I am 2 years ago, and then that following summer, I sat down here at testimony and talked to everybody about it, and I had Jay Ramras pointing his finger at a gentleman and his granddaughter and said, I'm going to get you that gas line. I'm going to get you a gas line. And here we are sitting, trying to form commissions, have more study groups. You got Mayor Dan Sullivan up in Anchorage. He forms a group to study the brown outages that's going to happen possibly this winter. And you got the same people in there that have been dealing with the energy here in the state of Alaska for very many years. And, you know, my idea in the whole thing is that, you know, we need to get an in-state gas line. I'm all for hydro. I'm all for tidal. I'm all for fusion. I'm for all these type of energies. But we're in a crisis mode now. You know, we can sit here and study this thing to death. But we have the resources up at Prudhoe Bay right now that can solve our energy problem, not just here in South Central Alaska, the rail belt, and the bush area. We have it right now here and available to do it if we have the will to do it and the leadership out there to really get this thing going. And I'm really counting on you people to really go to the next session and say, hey, you know, it's time to act. You know, I'm on a fixed income. I just retired from Safeway 3 years ago. I'm on a fixed income. I see my NSTAR gas bill double. My electrical bill has gone up like 35%, and it's tough. It's out there tough making ends meet. And I'm representing myself, my children, my grandchildren, and the future of Alaska. We have the capability here. We have the resources. Let's explode our resources. And what's wrong? What's wrong? I sat there at a ConocoPhillips meeting, and right here in this same building. And I asked the gentleman, the VP, I said, what would happen if we built a gas pipeline down from Prudhoe Bay down here to the Kenai, reopen Agrium, have jobs, industrial base, something for Alaska instead of shipping everything outside? I said, would it be possible? And he just stood there for about 30 seconds. He says, oh, yeah. He says, you'd have all kinds of industry throughout Alaska with this inexpensive gas. But I'm looking ahead for the future. I mean, we need a future for ourselves. We need to have gas. We're in a crisis mode. Yeah, we can study hydro. We can study wind. There's all kinds of things, but we need to act now. And I just want to thank you all for your service to our state. I know it's a tiresome job, thankless, but I just want to thank you for stepping up and serving our state. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pat, and thank you for your service to the country. We really appreciate it. Is there questions for Pat? Thanks.
Okay, thank you
very much.
Madam
Chair, sorry.
Just a comment. I mean, I salute you, Pat, for what you're saying, because I agree with you 110%. And you mentioned Jay Ramerson, and this past week we were up in Fairbanks giving that in-state gas presentation. We will bring that in-state gas presentation here, and it's about hopefully trying to get Agrium open back up, expanding the LNG plant, petrochemical industry complex, as you alluded to, potentially a concrete operation, getting gas to Donlin Creek potentially as a customer, and some others. But you're right. I mean, we as Alaskans deserve in-state gas. Now, it has to be affordable. We got to work on the economics of it. It takes much longer than you like. It takes a lot longer than I like. I agree with you everything except I'm not with you on the income tax. So other than that, I'm with you. All right, I'm with you. Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much, Pat. We really appreciate it. Bill Warren. Thanks for being here, Bill. We really appreciate you coming out and testifying today.
Thank you for letting me testify here today. I'm Bill Warren. I'm a retired pipe fitter, welder. 59 years up here. Came up here in the back seat of a 51 Oldsmobile. I have made a bucket of money supporting my family on value-added industries here in Cook Inlet. And it's a rust belt now. It's gone. And despite all endeavors to get Cook Inlet to drill, where's Escapeta? Where's Pacific Energy? Bankrupt. Where is that Blake 151 jackup rig? You know, the beat goes on, so I guess the second Tuesday of next week we'll start drilling the inlet. So we're in an energy crisis. Alan Bailey, the best reporter around, we're blacking out this winter. All we need is a bad winter. Then they're going to close the schools down, and they're going to close the churches down. Then Kenai and Anchorage will be fighting about who gets the gas. It's bad. In 2002, I and 63% of Alaska citizens voted for AGDA. We wanted gas way back then. In 2004, they came out with a comprehensive report, and it was ignored. Now, in 2007, I imagine all of you have read this. There's enough engineering data in here and enough things going to build the doggone thing. I'm an old pipeliner. I understand this. Now, we're going to Canada with a big mine, and I think that's a Brooklyn Bridge deal. I think they're going to have failed open seasons, and they're going to mess around, and they're going to end up exporting it over the top, LNG. And they're going to do that because Norway is already breaking trail. Kitimat, B.C. is putting an LNG chain in down in British Columbia. We're way behind the curve on things, way behind. We should have had that original 2004 project going. Now we're in a bind, we're in a train wreck. And I'm for alternatives, but they cannot save our ship now. We are we may be too late. And there's nobody in Alaska smart enough, or even in America, United States, to run this state on anything but natural gas. $1 billion of infrastructure, it's clean, it's available. 100 years ago, they figured out that if you don't have gas in one area, and you got it in another, you run a pipeline in between them. We can't figure that out. And it's time we do this. How are we going to do it? Well, we put Harry Noah in to cut the legs off of AGDA. He's up there with a compass and off trying to figure a route. Department of Transportation figured a route years ago, the Richardson Highway route. Goes by the military bases. From Big Delta to Glen Allen is a landmass 2 times bigger than Kansas. Nobody in it. We need energy in there. Agriculture, sky's the limit. We're not using vision. And we need to do this. The only way I can see to do it, because we aren't a train wreck, is to get that doggone LNG plant reversed. You got a big high tariff retrofitting. It's over capacity when you do get it to do the job. Then you got to go search around Russia and everywhere to get an LNG spot price, small amount. What, $10, $12 MCF to heat our homes? We get a governor, Alaska emergency, energy crises, direct AGDA plus a competitive pipeline company to build the thing. It's a combination of private sector and state of Alaska, ownership and building it. It'll work. If NSTAR wants it on the show, fine. But let's forget that Parks Highway. Let's go where it should go. And let's figure on LNG out of Valdez. It's money in our pocket. Let's go with these value-added industries, NGLs, propane. I can't see anybody in the bush that would argue against having propane or CNG to their village. And here's the big deal. In Utah, they're using natural gas right now for primary transport. We could do that here. All those people in the bush could be running their ATVs and snow machines on CNG. We got to do this. All right, $4 billion. Let's round it off. We put up some cash plus bonding that Speaker Mike is good at getting for the railroad. The pipeline company, let's say it's Bechtel, let's say it's Fluor. We know they're good pipeline companies. They come in with some cash, and we might have to help them a little bit on the bonding. We start pre-building. We get it from Glen Allen to Anchorage, and we use it as storage so we can get through the night in Anchorage on these cold days. It'll be a 16 or 20-inch line. Folks, the engineering is here. We don't need Harry Noah wandering around out there in the outback. We need to start doing this, getting the pipeliners to weld the pipe. We used to weld a half a mile of pipe a day. And I'm going to lie a little bit and say a mile. We didn't quite get a mile, but I know we can do a half a mile. You get 4 spreads, we can eat 700 miles of pipe up in no time. Get on those compressor stations. It's not big pipe, it's off the shelf, 24-inch, we can get it. We don't have to go around the world to get 48-inch. And really, I hope they do see LNG, that stuff up off the top later, because it doesn't interfere what we got to do for us. We need 1 billion feet, and there's Aegea, isn't it? Right square in the way, so we have to run at low pressure for a while. 0.5 B. All right, let's do it. Until we get that resolved, then we can put another compressor station up and jack it up, because a 24-inch, I'd like to see a 30-inch, really. That would really make... That was my granddaughter that held the sign here 2 years ago that Pat was talking about. Charlie saw her. That's all I got. I'm rambling now, but I expect this thing to go into an emergency mode. I expect that Anchorage going cold and dark. And what are we going to do then? Call FEMA? Get tickets to Arizona? Get a big mound of coal up in the park strip so you can put it in your living room? No, let's build a pipeline. Let's do this right. We should have done it, and we can do it. And thank you for listening to me.
Thank you very much, Mr. Warren. We appreciate you being here and testifying. Appreciate your comments. Is there any questions for Bill? Thank you so much. Jim Kaufman? Thanks for being here, Jim. We appreciate it.
I'm Jim Kaufman, and I live here in Kenai, and I'm not representing anybody. I tried that, but I didn't quite make it. I actually ran for Senate in this district and didn't do a real good job, as you can see. I'd be over there if I did. I did get a third of the vote and spent very little time. I really just wanted to try to get some issues out in the public forum, and two of those issues were energy and in the electrical energy and in gas. I used to work at Agrium, and I can say this much to you. In the state of Alaska, there is zero industrial-priced energy. There's barely commercial energy. Residential energy we have, and it'll be the last to shut down. But there is zero industrial energy. Many of the people that I worked with went to a plant that's owned by, I think, a Swedish company in the state of Washington. Why? Cheap electricity. Our people move south because another state has cheap energy. Do we lack energy in Alaska? No. Only the human energy to develop it. We have, well, we all know what we have. It's amazing. You know, I look at the numbers that I see in the public record. Cook Inlet gas lands in Japan at $7.21 on average, which means it leaves here at about $5.25. NSTAR buys wholesale from between $7 and $8.91 for the same gas here. Those are facts that you can find. Go to the Department of Energy, and you'll see most of them. RCA has those other figures. We are paying more for our own gas in our own state than the Japanese do. When we run out, send one of those gas ships, turn him around in Homer, and bring him back. That's the cheapest gas we can buy. It's cheaper than what we're paying today. LNG ships into the east coast of America, the rest of America, at $5.21 on average right now today. Okay, I was just outside in Washington, D.C., looking at the gas prices, and it was about 60 cents a gallon less than what we pay for gasoline here. I thought, that's interesting. I go to fix my house, and the fellows I saw walking the streets down there in D.C. will send me money to caulk around my window and to fix my furnace, and yet I pay half the cost to the city of Kenai to pave the city streets in front of my house. So we live in a very interesting world today. We have so many rules and regulations on energy that it's very difficult for the public to find out all the programs that are available to them. And I heard some of the utilities here saying the same thing about, you know, the paperwork and the lack of ability, especially in the bush, to figure out what's out there, how do I get it done. One of the things I campaigned on was very close to, I forgot her name, from the Bush was talking about, and that is to bring all the utilities together, and if not physically, at least the dollars at the back end. The people in the Bush need the help of Alaskans. I can almost guarantee you most Alaskans have a big enough heart to add a dollar or a penny to their kilowatt hour to help fund that. I just believe that's a reality. We are those kind of people in Alaska. And if we bring together under some consortium and put the money in energy, not at small little plants out in a creek somewhere, but at the biggest part for the biggest dollar, and get that energy grid up and fired up, and there is no reason we can't. I know the issues from each individual legislature, you know, where do we get my money, your money, you know, my facility, my green energy, yours. The idea of such a small state as Alaska, 600,000 people, is a small co-op in many places. We should not have an energy problem in Alaska. We need to bring together people in Alaska in one combined effort to get it done. And, you know, it seems to me ANGDA is a great tool for the legislature. It was a law passed by the people. I think we forget that. It is Alaska statute, ANGDA, that if we just push that through and got it done, we'd be moving some gas. My son just, I'm originally from Pennsylvania. My son just graduated from Penn State, and he's now in Virginia Beach, a second lieutenant in the Marines. But they send out a alumni paper, and in it, Penn State, for those of you that lived on this side of the world, it's called the Farmer School. It's an agricultural school, and so it's a big economy in Pennsylvania. $40 billion a year is agriculture. And so they had in there an article on natural gas, and I thought, well, that's interesting, a farmer's paper. Well, what they're doing is paying $1,600 an acre to farmers in on the East Coast. Early days, the farmer had his mineral rights, so the farmer gets paid for what comes out of the ground. The western states kept that at the state level. So these farmers are getting $1,600 an acre from gas companies, plus a royalty on the gas, and they only have to throw a stone length to a pipeline, and their customer, the East Coast, is between here to Anchorage away. And I thought, well, they're paying that kind of money. How much gas are they talking about? 100 trillion cubic feet in western PA. So we cannot sit around and think that in 15 years our pipeline will be economically feasible, I think is that the term that I think most of you have heard over the decades. It's not economically feasible. There is gas all over this nation, and outside, that's different from Alaska. In Alaska, we have big companies operating, and one of the buddies of my son left one of the oil companies that works here in Alaska in a small way that would just love to get on the slope but can't get into the pipe, can't get into the system. So he quit the oil business and went to the Marines. He thought it was more fun. But anyway, outside, most of the oil and gas produced in the lower 48 is produced by smaller companies. In Alaska, it's the other way around. We have the big three or the big four here. So I forgot where I was going with that. Anyway, I just think that these smaller companies, that's where I was going, outside, aren't going to sit around waiting. They have resources, and they are working, and they're going to put gas and oil into pipelines that are very close to the resource, and it's not going to cost them a $40 billion project to get it going. And that's why I think that the proposal that came out last summer, just before you took the vote on the AGEA project, that the governor said to start that pipeline at Beluga and head north to Delta under ANGDA with cooperation, that sounds great, because if the big one fails, we'll just keep headed north. We'll just keep moving. And we could be turning dirt in 16 months. On funding is the issue, both either way, either gas or electric or both. I lived in Glen Allen for a number of years in the 80s, and electricity then, I was paying 19 cents a kilowatt. It's HEA is charging 13 cents right now. And the reason we had some of the highest price of gas or electricity in the state at the time is we did not qualify for power cost equalization because we had gotten money from the four dam pool. And having already gotten that money, we couldn't qualify for the other money, so we were paying the highest price in the state at the time. $1,984, we were making about $10,000 a year back then. I know it's hard to remember, but that was big dollars for electricity. I put in a diesel-fired generator at the Bible College, the facility I worked out there. I was maintenance director and produced 12 cents a kilowatt electricity on diesel co-generating. I was able to beat hydro state-funded electricity. So I just rattled my head for years over that. And I was at the AEA was out here last summer, and I was talking to him. What about the concept of instead of paying back like we do under ADA and paying back the monies, taking some permanent fund money and investing permanently in electricity so that only the interest is what we get back? When I look at some of the projects, I know the Agrium project that almost went through, they were looking at a 20% return on the investment for that new coal-powered. That's a pretty good return. And the monies that we're seeing return today in our permanent fund, and, well, it's not very nice, you know. So I think if we change the payback on that, it could get exciting. That money that we're investing in the people of Alaska for energy, it would be the percentage that comes back in interest that would be identical to the permanent fund. It is no different than the money we give in the permanent fund we send to a company in Oklahoma or wherever, and we get whatever we can get out of returns. So I think if we invested permanently in energy or in that pipeline or both and looked at a different funding formula and that money just stayed there for 50 years or however you want to work it out, but we could certainly compete with private industry at providing energy for Alaska and bringing industry into Alaska. We won't get it without reasonably priced industrial fuels, which do not exist in Alaska today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kaufman. Is there any questions for Mr. Kaufman? Thank you so much for testifying and taking the time out of your day today. Richard DeMello? Thanks, Richard. I appreciate you being here and testifying today.
Thank you for saying the name right. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not your usual person here because let me show you something. That's a Hawaiian pigeon for whatever. And what it means is that I don't believe all the politics that is going on when we have people say that Japanese and Chinese are paying less than us. We're paying through the nose. I had to make a deal with HEA to make my payments on my electrical bill because it went up. And we hear a lot of testimony about people who are saying we can do this, we can do that. But whenever we talk to the politicians, they say, well, we'll have to take it under advisement or something, which means whatever. Okay? I'm, for one, I'm tired of it. We have a lot of people. I think it was to turn around and ask the people, how many of you believe anything is going to be done? I bet you I get a good hand on those that think nothing is going to be done. I feel that way. No matter what we say, even when we have experts come up and say, we can do this, we can do that, we can do this, they've done it in the lower 48. Now, why can't we in Alaska do it? Are we not a progressive enough state that we can keep up with the rest of the country? Some years ago, about maybe 8 years ago, there was a study made about the energy that can be derived from tidal action here in the inlet. I've got a copy of that report. According to the report, the Cook Inlet is one of the best places than two other areas or one other area in the world for tidal current energy. We haven't done anything with it. Then maybe, I think it was last year, they said, let's look into tidal energy in the inlet. Again, they're looking at it, but they're not doing anything. Okay? Nothing's being done. We're tired of that. I am. I talk to a lot of people. They're tired of it. Now, the people that have been coming here, they've been very polite. But I bet you they have stronger feelings than what their voice tone dictates. I'd like to see some action. We need to do something. We need to keep up with the rest of the country. And we need to stop benefiting other countries and stop benefiting the people here in Alaska. You're in office because of those people, because of us. We put you there. Now represent us and do us some good. Don't do China. Don't do Japan. Don't do the other countries good. Do us some good. You know what we want. You know what we need. And I say thank you.
Thank you very much for being here and testifying. We appreciate your thoughts. John Landaway? Oh, I'm sorry. Sir, Senator Huggins has a question for you.
Just a comment to the... Okay. I'm sorry, I missed your first name. Charlie Huggins here from In and About Wasilla. On your comment about title, there is a gentleman in Anchorage that has a proposal for title. Yep. It involves Fire Island coming over to the peninsula. And he and I are working on having a conversation with CH2M Hill to do some additional engineering. So I did not say we're going to have tidal tomorrow. To be quite frank, tidal energy production is, it may not be over the horizon, but it's a little ways out.
Well, London has been doing it for years.
Yeah, I understand. I'm just telling you the feedback I've gotten about the, you know, cost effectiveness of doing it. But we're pursuing it. So I just want you to know that it's not a dead issue. But it's not tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Huggins. Thank you, Richard. Mm-hmm. John Landaway? Thanks for being here. We really appreciate you sticking around. And this is our last person that signed up to testify. So if there's anybody that I haven't gotten to that hasn't signed up, if you want to just sign up, we'll get to you after John finishes.
Madam Chair and all, thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify today. My name is John Landaway. I'm from Kenai. I know several of the folks sitting up there at the table, but not all of you. I worked at Agrium as well, and I just want to add weight and numbers of people that are testifying and asking you to push an in-state gas pipeline. I think that's an absolutely necessary ingredient for any sort of an interim solution, if you want to call it that. It's not a final solution, but it's an interim solution for the rail belt and, in particular, for Kenai Peninsula. All of our viable energy around here, save the stuff coming from Bradley Lake, as you all very well know, is gas-fired. And we're going to have some more fuel to keep that going. And I believe we're already too late. I say that with... some depth of knowledge. I think I worked as a control engineer at Agrium, and I did projects over the last 5 years actually at Agrium as a direct result of the deliverability issues in the Cook Inlet region for gas. So I realize that this hearing is for the bills at hand, 218 and 219, but I just wanted to I just want to add a weight as another number, another person that says, really, the most important thing that needs to happen in this state right now is that the in-state gas pipeline needs to get run down into South Central Alaska from the slope. If you don't do anything else around all of the other solutions that you're talking about here, which I do support a Department of Energy, and I do support planning statewide, I'll say that. But the most important thing that you can do is to get that pipeline here. Thanks very much.
Thank you, John. Any questions for John? Thanks, John. And I think we're hearing loud and clear that we need a in-state gas supply, especially from here and from the regions that I come from and some of the other members come from. Is there anybody else that wishes to testify before the committee? Anybody online that wishes to testify? Representative Seaton, do you have any comments?
Thank you. I appreciate listening to the hearing.
Before we adjourn the meeting? Mm-hmm. With that, I just want to say thank you very much to the community for allowing us to be here and to take up part of your afternoon and get some important feedback from you. And I appreciate having this meeting here and Representative Chenault.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would also like to thank, I know we have a lot of APA members here, and I appreciate you sticking around to voice your opinions for the issues from across the state. But I certainly want to thank Pat, Bill, Rick, John, other local people here, Kathleen, I think, in the back there, to voice their opinions and to let other legislators know what you've been telling us for years now. So I certainly appreciate you being here, and I thank the committee, not only the House, but also the Senate committee members for coming down and coming to God's country. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, and we just want to thank our hosts, the APA. They did do a great job putting this together for us, and we appreciate the time that they spend, not only with their membership, but with the legislature advising us and giving us good feedback on things that we need to be aware of around the state. And for all the residents here, thank you. And we all can be reached at our offices, and I think you can go through Representative Chenault to get a hold of us if you have anything that you didn't add here today that you want to tell us personally. We'll be more than happy to hear that. And we will be coming out with some legislation, I know, on the House side, probably later this fall, that will deal with the statewide energy plan and addressing some of the concerns about the Department of Energy bill and some other things that we have before the committee. So we are working towards a piece of legislation that I think will be an omnibus energy bill that both the House and the Senate will be agreeing upon to carry forward, and we look forward to that and sharing that when it becomes available, and getting feedback once again from you on the things that we've heard and put down on paper and making sure that we get it right. So with that, I will adjourn the meeting at 4 o'clock.